And welcome back to Channel 9 Live here from TechEd 2014 in Houston, Texas. My name is Brian Keller, and I'm joined by my good friend, Brian Harry. Brian is the Corporate Vice President in charge of the Visual Studio Application Lifecycle Management team at Microsoft.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you. It's good to be back.
So a lot of viewers probably saw your keynote this morning where you got up on stage and talked about some of the new things that that are happening in your world. That was just a tiny slice that we were able to share in the
how much time did they give you?
A whole 6 minutes. So I wanted to talk more about that and then talk about some of the other news that you have to share with us today.
Of course.
So let's start with that piece that you shared this morning, which is all focused on extensibility around Visual Studio Online, right?
Yep. Yeah. What we announced was that we now have a an open API set to Visual Studio Online that's based on REST, OAuth, service hooks, and JSON. And you know, I think there's a couple things that are interesting about it. It's based on industry standards, and that means that virtually every platform can use it, and lots of services are already sort of compatible, as it were, with it. So you know, it turns out we built integration. There's a service called
Zapier.
Zapier, thank you. There's a service called Zapier, which is basically a service-to-service integration plumbing.
Right.
Basically, can sync events from one service and transform those events and then send them to another service. Mm-hmm. We built a plugin for Zapier to recognize Visual Studio Online and the events that we both send and receive. And with Zapier, just that one integration we did, we get integrations with hundreds of other applications that can both, again, send and receive events and get some cool integration scenarios. And in addition to that kind of service-to-service integration, the nice thing is it also enables you to access VSO from your devices. So from Android, from iOS, from Windows, makes it super easy to write simple data snacking apps that that access Visual Studio Online.
That's great. And so I want to talk a little bit more about how we make this real. Like, what does this actually enable? And I want to remind you that you can ask your questions of Brian in the viewer. So please send your questions, and we'll answer them here on the air. The demo that you showed this morning was with User Voice, which I know Microsoft uses User Voice a lot. For people that aren't maybe familiar with User Voice, first of all, what does User Voice do?
Yeah. So User Voice is a great app. It's uservoice.com. And I encourage you to visit visualstudio.uservoice.com. It's an app that allows somebody who builds software like us to interact with their community, take suggestions. People can comment on those suggestions, vote on them. You get to give feedback to the community and basically have a discourse with your community about what they would like to see in your product. And as I say, visualstudio.uservoice.com is our User Voice site for Visual Studio. And you can go there and see thousands of suggestions and thousands of votes on things. It's an important part of what we factor in as we're doing our planning for a release.
You know, a lot of people, they wonder if we actually, like, is this just the release valve that people can vent to, or do we actually pay attention to that? But no, we really do. I remember we fixed things on stage before where we say, hey, we're announcing this. It's in direct response to this feedback, and let's actually resolve it on stage, and you get a big applause, right? But what does that have to do with Visual Studio Online?
Yeah, it's a good question. So User Voices is a great site to interact with your community. So you might use Visual Studio Online for your development team to manage your work, to manage your backlog, your source code, your builds, all of that stuff. It'd be really nice if there were a way to sort of feed all of that information from User Voice into your development system where you're going to actually, say, take a suggestion, bring it in, schedule it into a sprint, break it down into all the work that needs to get done, assigned to all the right people, and when that work is done, that rolls back up, goes back to User Voice, and is reflected back to your community that you've started on that work item, you've completed that feature, and that's exactly what the User Voice team built based on our new open APIs, is you get exactly that capability. That's very, very nice.
That's great. So let's talk a little bit technically about that integration. You know, on stage, you were up there with Richard White, the CEO of User Voice, and he created us. He took a suggestion, and he said, let's hand this off to the engineering team.
Yep.
you approved it, you scheduled it for a sprint, and then you handed that back to him.
Yes.
We didn't really get into the mechanics of how that worked. So, yep. So can you break that down for us?
Yeah, sure. So the first thing you have to do is you've got to link your User Voice account to your VSO account. And basically, that's an OAuth handshake where you'll go to User Voice and say, you know, please link to VSO. VSO will prompt you and say, you know, do you grant permission to User Voice to access this information?
And User Voice will then access it as you, as Brian Harry?
As whatever credentials I enter,
okay.
Whoever I'm logged in with. So, yes, I get to specify what the credentials are. TFS does an OAuth handshake and says, yep, you know, you have permission to do this.
Got it.
And now the accounts are bound. So now the user of User Voice automatically has permissions to do, you know, a set of things in
right.
Visual Studio Online. So in this case, what User Voice does is, you know, take a suggestion that's got a vote count and a bunch of comments and stuff, and there's a simple menu item to send it to Visual Studio Online. Mm-hmm. And what they'll do is then call our REST API in Visual Studio Online to create a new work item. They will also register for service hooks so that any event, any changes to that work item generate a call back to them. It's a service hook callback that generates a JSON packet.
Like a delegate, basically.
Yeah,
right?
Kind of so like a delegate in C Sharp, yeah.
You don't have to do polling. You,
that's
you
right.
Just, you'll wait and hear back, right?
They'll get a call back on an URL that says, hey, this work item has changed, and here's the set of changes to that work item. So they send it over to us. We change it. You know, the development team works on it. They mark it in progress. They mark it finished. All those changes get reflected back as events to User Voice. User Voice processes those events and updates their sort of their history of that suggestion for the community manager, who can then reflect it back to the end users.
Got it. That's great. And what I really love about what you showed on stage with Richard was, number one, as a developer, I'm seeing in the user's, you know, own, I'm going to use the word voice, user's own voice, right, exactly what they're asking for, so you don't have to guess about how they worded a suggestion, which maybe flowed through a product manager, because it actually is linked back to that. And then conversely, it gives transparency back to the end user that says, hey, we're taking this seriously. We're actually working on this. So that's great. So I can see why this is really powerful for that type of scenario. But what are some of the other, you mentioned other partners, what are some of the other things you can do now that Visual Studio Online, really, it's a development platform now, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, we've built, so far, we've built or worked with partners to build about 18 specific integrations with Visual Studio Online.
Not counting the Zapier ones.
Not including the Zapier ones, which gives you hundreds.
I mean,
that just gives you a huge number that's really, really cool. Of the 18 we've picked, obviously, Zapier is one of them.
Right.
You know, we did GitHub integration so that you can do things. For example, if you want to use GitHub for some open source work and you want to have a commit in GitHub, trigger, say, a build in Visual Studio Online, send messages to the team room. As you check in, you commit to GitHub, you might enter bug numbers or work item numbers in your comment. Those can get automatically updated in VSO so that the work item is associated with the change set in GitHub. We have a link back, so when I go, for example, look at that work item that says it was resolved by this check-in, I can follow that link back to the actual changes that were in GitHub.
Great.
We've also integrated with Cato, which is a chat, sort of a nice chat program. Again, capturing events that can go into your chat room. We did integration with Zendesk, which is a ticketing system. It's kind of similar. The integration is similar in nature to the User Voice things in terms of being able to send
bidirectional
sort of incidents
flow, right?
yeah. from your ticketing system into your development system
right.
and then bidirectionally reflect changes in both places. You know, we did HipChat, Asana. It's a long list
sure.
that we did. And then as you know, you said, you throw in the others, and there's hundreds.
Sure. So obviously, you know, your team is in a great position to work with these partners directly, and you've got a list of several dozen that you're working with.
Yeah.
What if I'm, let's say I'm an enterprise developer, and we've got some system that we've built used over the years, and we want to also integrate that with Visual Studio Online somehow. Is this like a weekend project? Is this like a full-time thing? How much effort is involved to make this work?
Yeah, it's going to vary a lot based on how deep you want the integration to be, how rich you want the experience to be. I think, you know, by comparison, the user voice ones, the Richard's team did it in a month. It was less than a month. And, you know, that was with a lot of helping us iron out the issues, right? Because it was not finished when they started working on it. So it gives you an idea for pretty rich integration. A developer or two for a few weeks can nail it. I think, you know, the other sort of magnitude thing I'd say is we had two developers, all 18 integrations were built and or managed by two developers over the period of probably 6 or 8 weeks that they did that. So it can be pretty fast to get it done.
That's great. So I see that Matt Ring is asking the very next question I was going to ask. So Matt, you read my mind, which is, you know, you announced all these things for Visual Studio Online. What about us TFS guys that are running TFS on premises? Can we expect to see these REST APIs as well?
Ah, well, welcome, Matt. Good to see you again. Yes, we definitely can. You know, exact timing is still TBD. Is absolutely our intention to provide these REST APIs, service hooks, etc., in our on-premises version. They're not done, and so I first want to set expectations around that. What we officially released today is a preview.
Right.
The APIs are not locked. In fact, I already know of a bunch of the APIs that need work. We haven't finished doing all the events we're going to do. We haven't finished covering the whole surface area we want to cover. My expectation is we are a few months away from even just getting on the cloud, getting the all this stuff locked down and final, that I can say this is V1, you know, compatibility guaranteed from here on out, you know, etc. And then in terms of when it comes to on premises, it'll just be in whatever our next appropriate ship vehicle for TFS is after that.
And okay.
So it'll depend on exactly how long it takes to lock it down and then when the next ship vehicle is. But it's going to be a little while for sure.
Got it. So I see a great question from our friend Gordon Beaming. He's down in South Africa, so it's like 3 o'clock in the morning there. So hi, Gordon. So Gordon is asking, you know, when you're thinking about user voice, right? User voice has this idea of comments that other people can say, I like that idea. Why don't you also do it this way and, you know, add a widget to it, right? Can those comments also flow back to Visual Studio Online for the developers so that you're kind of having a conversation about it?
Yeah, so certainly you could do that. I don't. I think right now the way User Voice has implemented it is they've designed it to have a community manager kind of in between deciding what information flows back and forth. They don't want every comment that any developer ever types into a work item to automatically reflect back to the community. It's funny. I have some experience with that. I think I got a. I just tell a funny side story.
Sure.
For was it Visual Studio 2013 Update 2? I always blog about these things, and we produce release notes in a KB article. And someone called my attention to one of our release notes in a KB article, and I don't remember exactly what it said, but it basically said something like, you know, changing this to make it harder, you know, for developers, or you know, something crazy like that.
Right.
Which you just look at it and you go, how in the world did something like that end up in our release notes?
Yeah.
And of course, I had people go look into it, and you know, you backtrack it into, oh, that was not a field that they expected to show up, and that wasn't, it was taken entirely out of context, that wasn't what it meant, and you're like, okay, fine.
Right.
So I think when you are communicating with the public, there is some value in at least making sure you know you're communicating with the public and are thoughtful about what you're saying.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great question, though. So let's switch gears a little bit. And you know, we talked about Visual Studio Online hitting crossing the million user mark, which is great. And a month ago, you went into general availability, right? So you've got three nines uptime, financially backed SLA, bet your business on it. You know, it's there for you, right? But the number one thing that I'm hearing people ask for, especially at a conference like TechEd, which is filled with enterprise developers, is where's my Active Directory support? So what's the story?
Yeah, so that's a huge ask. Everybody wants that. We want it. Mm-hmm. And so we were on that journey. The first step in that journey we actually released at Build a month ago, where we demoed the sort of vNext Azure portal. And in that portal, there are three things: websites, databases, and VS Online. Those are the three capabilities in there. And in that work, we added Active Directory support initially just for that narrow scenario. So in the new portal, for projects created there, you can have you can have them be Active Directory backed. Just last week, we expanded that and enabled you to add Active Directory backing from the existing Azure portal. So if you go to the Azure portal and you go create an account now, that account can have an Azure Active Directory, and you can add users from your Active Directory.
Okay.
That can be, you know, synchronized with your on-premises Active Directory, so you get sort of your corporate identities in the VSO account. Now, you know, of course, of the million users who are already using VSO, they're going to ask, great, but I already have an account. I don't want to create a new one.
Yep.
And that's coming. And, you know, so that's sort of next on our list. Of course, you know, an existing account adds additional complexity because we've got to migrate all of your data. You're not going to want to lose your history. You're not going to want to lose your identity. So you've been working as, you know, I've been working as bharry_msft@hotmail.com.
Yep.
Now I want to bind that to bharry@microsoft.com.
Right.
I don't want to lose all my data when I do that. So we've got to not only add AD backing, we've also got to add a migration process to convert all of your identities to your AD identity. So I think in the next 2 or 3 months is kind of the time frame in which we'll get to what I'd say pretty complete Active Directory integration.
That's great. Great questions. Keep them coming onto Channel 9 Live. And I wanted to make another point there, which is that Visual Studio Online is free for people who are MSDN subscribers.
Yes.
Right? So I can have a team of 500 people. As long as they're all MSDN subscribers, I'm not paying another dime.
That's right.
And one of the important things that I saw that your team did was allow you to take your MSDN subscription ID, which might be bharry54 at Hotmail, and then link that back to your Active Directory ID so you can actually show up in the system as bharry at Microsoft.
Yeah, that's another good example of just, you know, these things take a surprising amount of work because there are things that you don't expect. Today, your MSDN subscription for the purpose of your MSDN benefits is linked to a Microsoft account, not to your Active Directory.
Right.
And as you say, we give you Visual Studio Online benefits with your MSDN subscription. So if you log in with your Microsoft account that's linked to your MSDN subscription, we automatically credit you use of VSO. Now, when you do Active Directory binding, you're not using your MSA. So we had to go back and add support to MSDN so that you could associate what your Active Directory credentials were with that MSDN subscription so that when you log in with those Active Directory credentials, we can recognize the MSDN subscription that you have.
Got it.
So it's just, there's all these corner cases we've got to go deal with to make them all work. And that actually already works.
Yeah,
so
right.
We've got that one.
Right.
Now.
So what you're telling me is the people who do that work have good job security because there's a lot of complexity there.
There's a lot there.
All right. So Blankenship here is asking another great question, our friend Ed. So he read my mind as well because this, is, believe it or not, was my next question. So you're telling me that you've got an SLA. You're telling me if I go to the Azure, the new Azure portal, I can create a VSO account that's Active Directory based. Great. I've got this on-premises Team Foundation server now. How do I get from my world of on-premises over to the cloud?
Yeah. So that's been a real question of the last, you know, 5 or 6 months. We've had a lot of people asking that. And so we've been partnering with a company called OpsHub. That was good. You can't drink it with the top on. We've been partnering with a company called OpsHub to produce a tool that will help you migrate your data from an on-premises TFS server into the cloud. And it is able to preserve source code, work items, test cases, and all with history and your user identity. So it'll also do a user mapping thing from your on-premises identity to your cloud identity. So, for example, if you do go to Microsoft accounts or you use a different Active Directory backing, they can do the mapping in the migration. That tool for sort of the basic case of the unmodified process template is free. So you can just download it and use it and it works and things are good, you know, and 20 or 30 minutes, depending upon how much data you have. It'll import it all over, and things will be good. If you have a much more complicated case where you've customized your process template and you've got to map your customizations to what's on Visual on VS Online,
sure.
Then you need to talk to them, and they may have a paid offering for you to help with
or
that.
Or back out those changes and go back that's to right. the known process template.
That's right.
Great.
Yeah.
So, all right. So that's a lot happening on Visual Studio Online. Let's switch gears a little bit because obviously DevOps, super
yep.
important. You
yep.
know, we've seen your team produce a lot, whether it's in the application insight side to get that data back into the development cycle, or both with release management for Visual Studio and System Center Operations Manager to kind of
yep.
take that data from dev and push it back to ops and come back.
Yep.
Release management, I know that we had some announcements that, frankly, so much in the keynote we didn't have time for. So
that's
let's
right.
let's go back and talk about release management a little bit. Maybe for folks that aren't familiar yet, what is release management, first of all?
So release management is sort of a part of the application lifecycle. When let me just take a step further back. When we talk about the application lifecycle, we talk about the totality of everything involved and all the people involved in producing software. And when we talk about modern application lifecycle, we talk about this loop from idea through implementation, deployment, and then feedback from
right.
the customer. And we talk about trying to execute that loop as rapidly as possible. And in fact, really successful agile organizations are doing that daily or weekly. Like they are really, really quickly going from idea back to implementation to deployment to feedback to next idea and adapting
sure.
very, very rapidly to what customers want. If you're going to do that, you've got to be able to deploy very fast,
right.
very reliably. And that means everything has to be automated. It means it has to be exactly the same automation that the developer uses as they're developing on their own machine.
Mm-hmm.
And we call that config as code, right? That's the developer owns all the configuration information and authors it as code, checks it into the version control system, code reviews it, does all the things that you'd normally do with any other code.
It's a first-class artifact, just like the code.
That's right. And so release management is fundamentally that process of taking stuff off the developer's machine and getting it into production. And depending upon your organization, the nature of your app, the nature of your business requirements, you may have a very, very short cycle where, you know, in the extreme, developer checks in, a continuous integration build kicks off. At the end of that, a continuous deployment executes, and boom, it's in production,
right.
you know, 5 minutes after you check it in. At kind of the other, you know, end, you may have a much more involved process that involves, the developer checking stuff in, it going into a staging or integration environment, going into a pre-production environment, and then ultimately going into a production environment after sort of all the right levels of testing and integration validation, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of managing change through that process, whether it's a very, very short process or a more involved process, is fundamentally the process of release management. How do I get it automated, deployed through those? How do I know what the status of it is? How do I know what testing's been done? How do I know who's signing off and who has signed off for it to move through each stage?
How do I know what's in this release? Is
that's
it
right.
worth deploying this release?
That's
right. Right.
And that's release management.
Okay. And so we have a solution, release management
yep.
for Visual Studio,
yep.
which builds on top of Team Foundation Server to offer that, right?
Yep.
So last year at TechEd, we were talking about this solution. And today we made some announcements around that, right?
Yes.
So specifically, what are those announcements?
So a couple. One, we announced that our release management solution will be supporting PowerShell desired state configuration, sometimes called PowerShell DSC. And it's sort of an evolution of the way you install things. You know, the traditional way has been you write a script that says, you know, do this, then create that, then rename that, then delete that, and a very sort of imperative script through
right.
the things you need to do. And the problem is they're fragile
sure.
because different environments are in slightly different states and they break, and you can spend a lot of time sort of building very robust install scripts.
Yeah.
And PowerShell DSC, what it does, rather than writing a script that says what to do, you declaratively say, here is what I want.
Right.
You say, I want a machine with IIS on it, with the following vroot, you know, at the following port number. And when the PowerShell script runs, it takes that desire, that statement of what it should be, looks at what the system actually is and figures out what changes have to be made in order to get the system as it is into the desired state. So it makes your sort of install scripts way easier to write, way more concise, and way more reliable.
Got it. And so so we have added release management. Support for DSC to
that's
release
right.
management.
That's, right.
that's going to be showing up, I think you said, a week from today.
That's right. A week from today in the Visual Studio 2013 Update 3 CTP. You know, it's kind of funny. We just today announced the release of Update 2.
Yeah.
And a week from today, we're yep. announcing the first CTP or yeah. you know, technology preview of Update 3. So it's... things happen fast in the cloud.
Continuous delivery, right?
Yes.
Now, the other thing that I noticed that that we did today was we made it possible for you to run client virtual machines
yes.
in Azure IaaS for the first time. A lot of people, I think, didn't realize that
that's right.
couldn't do that before,
yes.
but due to some licensing and some other
yep.
support reasons we
yep.
had in, but now that's possible, which is
yep.
great. So I can use that as my developer desktop floating around and follow me from home to work.
Yep.
I can also use that to develop and test my applications that need to run on Windows Client, like a
yep.
Windows Store application, right?
Yep.
But the other thing that we announced today is that the release management tooling will also recognize my IaaS VMs, right?
Yes, that's right. In Azure.
In right. Azure.
Yes.
Right.
So when
right.
you one of the new features that's coming, and it's just one of many. I mean, there's a bunch of features coming in our release management tooling in Update 3.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we're talking about right now is the ones that are going to show up in CTP1. There'll be a bunch more that come in CTP2 and 3 and so on.
Right.
But when you are when you associate your release with a cloud, with the mm-hmm. cloud, it will automatically go out and query Azure, identify the VMs that you have out there, mm-hmm. and then enable you to do deployments into those VMs.
Right, and you can also add all of the MSDN subscriptions of everybody on your team, which
yep.
is great.
That's right. Yep.
And then you can even set up tags so that one of the many uses for tags is you can say anytime Brian requests a test environment, let's push that out to his subscription, and anytime Larry does, let's put that out to his subscription.
Yep.
So that's really, really nice. Let's also talk a little bit more about something else which came out since the last time we were at TechEd, which is Application Insights.
Yeah, yeah.
How should people think about what we're doing in that space?
Sure. So going back to the lifecycle for a minute, if sort of the overall goal of this thing is to execute from idea through implementation, deployment, and feedback. We just talked sort of about the path from implementation to deployment. It's an incredibly important path. You know, the next one is sort of deployment back to, you know, idea. What is the feedback mechanism? How do I know?
I built this thing. I want to know,
that's
is anybody
right.
using it?
Is anybody using it? Is it crashing every time
right.
somebody tries to use it? So Application Insights is about providing telemetry to help you understand, is your application available, performing, and succeeding? So let's talk about what those words mean.
Okay.
Available means, you know, is it running? Like, is it there, or has it crashed? Has it gone down? Are people getting 404s when they hit your site? Page not found errors,
mm-hmm.
you know, 500 errors. Like, is it there and is it working? Is it performing? And that's, you know, pretty simple. Are you getting good response time to the user? And then is it succeeding is a more subtle notion. So everybody builds an app for a purpose.
Yeah.
And succeeding is about measuring whether or not the app is accomplishing that purpose. Now, for example, if no one's using the app, it's almost certainly not accomplishing the purpose.
Sure.
Or if you just spent, you know, 6 weeks building some really cool new feature and less than 1% of your user base started using that feature, it's probably not accomplishing what you set out to do.
Right.
Or if every month 10% of your user base is quitting and going away and not using it anymore, it's probably not succeeding. So it's a measure of what your users are doing on the service, and is it what you intend them to do on the service, and how are the changes you're making changing what they're doing on the service.
Sure.
So that's kind of what Application Insights is about, is help me understand what's happening with my app. And that's app in a general sense. So it's usually, when we talk about telemetry, it's very often we think in the sense of servers. And application performance management is sort of a category that's been around for a while. But, you know, apps today aren't just servers. They are servers and services. So my code, my server, depends on other services out there, like, you know, VS Online depends on probably Azure. Half a dozen different services, SQL, Azure, Service Bus, Azure Active Directory. I mean, it's a bunch of services right. that we need to know what's happening with. It also has device clients. So, you know, your app might have an Android device, might have a Windows desktop experience. It might have a general web browser experience. And you want to know what's happening in those things as well. So when we think about the sort of available, performing, and succeeding.
Right.
You think about that totality from, you know, the data, the server, the services, and the application and the client tiers, the devices that the user's using to access.
Right, and I've observed that your team, that you really do practice what you preach, which is to say that you have these hallways which have monitors set up,
yep.
like this one, that actually have your Application Insights dashboard on them. I can see why availability is important. I can see how you can use that. I can see why performance is important.
Yep.
Can you give us some concrete examples of how the succeeding, like how do you actually know, are people being successful with Visual Studio Online, which is your biggest cloud service
sure.
that you run?
So, you know, let's take some simple metrics.
Okay.
We look at usage and you know, one of the things I look at every day is signups. So did I get, the thousands of signups today that I expected to get? And when I do, you know, I do some big announcement at a conference, when I release a new feature, how did it affect signups? Did I actually, I if I'm going to improve the product, I'm going to expect more people to want to use it. And if I do, and I don't see more people want to use it, more people signing up to use it, then I'm wondering, okay, what did I do wrong? What's wrong with that feature? Why wasn't that appealing? Another one I look at very regularly is what we call user engagement. So who's using it? How often are they using it? Are they stopping using it? So we have this notion of a loyal user who uses the service on a regular basis. And you know, those are the last people in the world I ever want to lose, right? Those are the people who've gone through sort of the learning curve, got into it, got all their assets into it, using it on a team on a regular basis. And if they sort of up and disappear, I want to know why. Mm-hmm. And we've got ways of reaching out. So if we know, hey, that customer who was a very heavy user left, we can reach out to them and say, hey, is there something we could do? Is there anything you didn't like? We also use it, for example, even to just, we know who the most active customers on our service are. Mm-hmm. We reach out to them and offer sort of a feedback opportunity. Hey, would you like to give us feedback on the service? We'd like to learn from your use and figure out how to make it better. So there's just so much we can do based on understanding what people are doing and how they're using the service. You know, we also, you know, there's sort of a marketing notion called a conversion funnel that we pay a lot of attention to, which is, okay, let's say we send out a mailing to a bunch of MSDN subscribers and say, hey, try out Visual Studio Online. Here's what you really like about it. You know, what's really good about it. Some number of those people are going to open the mail and click on the link. Some number of those people are then going to never go any further. And some are going to say, yeah, that looks really interesting. Let me sign up and try it. Some of those people who sign up are never going to actually do anything with it.
Right.
Some of them are going to actually go create a project, check in some source code. Some of those are going to play with it for a few hours and then go away and never do any more. Some of those are going to turn into somebody who,
sure.
you know, who really uses the product on an ongoing basis. So you measure all of these things and you see, you know, was my mailing effective? Did I catch people's eye? Did a lot of people want to sign up? Was the sign-up process easy enough, or did I have a lot of people who bounced out as they tried to go through the sign-up process because it was too complicated
right.
to get started? You know, once they got started, was the feature set compelling, and did people stick with it and keep using it, or did they leave?
Sure.
And then we can start trying things. Let's try a new sign-up page. Let's try a different email. Let's try a new feature that we think are going to really make the service more appealing to people. And you can start experimenting and trying different things and find out what's working and what people really like.
Great. So those are great examples. You know, Matt's asking here with respect to Application Insights, can you use that for company-wide internal web applications? So things that aren't hosted in the cloud.
Yeah, and the answer is definitely yes. So we support you having sending telemetry from any application anywhere. Now, our telemetry, our application insight service itself runs in the cloud. Sure. So wherever you run your app, whether it's, you know, servers running in our data center in Azure in the cloud, whether it's running in your data center, whether it's on devices in your, you know, in your corporate network or distributed around the world, as, you know, say Microsoft is, we have people all over the globe in offices around the world. Wherever it is, it's sending telemetry to the cloud. The cloud is then correlating all of that telemetry, digesting it, and producing sort of real, you know, insights into what's happening in your application. We also provide sort of raw telemetry digesting capabilities. So you can write queries, sort of learn your, you know, learn what you want to learn about it, and then generate graphs out of that and post those on your dashboard. We also have some logging telemetry capabilities. So, as a developer, if you've ever built a service, you know that logging is an incredible part of making a successful service.
Right.
It's incredibly important. So what you can do is you can log everything, send it back to the service, and then be able to do correlation over logs, be able to find errors in the logs and do root cause analysis. And all of that works regardless of where the application lives.
Sure, sure. And I think the other point to make about this is that it's not just for your production applications.
That's right. Yes.
You can have a single dashboard that shows you side by side your production environment, your staging environment, and your test environment. And you might realize that you have a regression in performance in your staging environment. You probably shouldn't VIP switch that into production, right?
Well, and the funny thing is, so what you're saying is absolutely right. And, you know, as you mature along kind of the cloud cadence lifecycle, what you'll find is the line between production and non-production gets pretty fuzzy. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you've got your developer's desktop, which is clearly not production.
Right.
And then you've got, you know, the thing that millions of users are using, and that's clearly production. But what actually happens is stuff progresses in stages as it moves, and it becomes gradually more production-like. So let's take our example. The way we work is, you know, developers do stuff in their own environment. At the end of our sprint, that code goes into a pre-production environment. We rely on telemetry out of the pre-production environment to tell us if anything's going wrong. So as we sort of write all of that code, or sort of run all of those tests on it to validate it, the telemetry is telling us if something's going wrong. Then we push it out to kind of our canary instance. So we've got a small instance that is in production, which runs a subset of our workload. In fact, today, mostly Microsoft people, so my team's work is actually on the canary instance.
Right.
And then we watch the telemetry on that. So we'll let it sit there for a day with real people using it and watch what happens. And if everything looks good, then we roll it out, you know, sort of one at a time to data centers around the world. So it becomes this very gray line, and telemetry is an important part of understanding how that app's doing in every environment in that spectrum.
Absolutely, and it's worth your investment, because at the end of the day, I mean, not only do you want to make your customers happy, but if you don't, you've got to financially refund their money, right?
That's right.
So I can see why that's really important. So that's great. Application Insights, go take advantage of it today from Visual Studio Online. Let's also talk a little bit about the future and maybe close up on this last piece, which is the Azure Preview Portal, right?
Yes.
Some people maybe saw this at Build. We showed it again at our foundational session. If you're new to it, you can go to portal.azure.com and you can take a look at what's there. Tell me about the vision. I mean, this was a year ago. You weren't even thinking about this. So how did
this
come about, right?
Yeah. So, you know, what's available today is a preview, and it doesn't have a lot in it yet. I think I mentioned earlier it has websites, databases, and a subset of the Visual Studio Online capabilities. But it is just it's just a peek into where we're going. Where we're trying to get to is, you know, particularly for cloud development, the sort of vision was, what if there was one place you could go that provided a fully integrated experience across everything a developer and development team needs to do, from, you know, managing my backlog to managing my tasks and decomposition and work, to writing building, deploying, debugging code.
But also all the individual resources which make up the app.
That's
right. You go to the Azure portal, the current Azure portal today, and you say, I need a website, I need a SQL database, I need storage account.
Yep.
And then it's kind of up to you to like remember that these three things
are
go
one
together,
app.
Right?
Yeah. So that's right. The new portal allows you a higher level view, a cloud service model, we call it, to talk about an aggregation of things that are an app. Mm-hmm. And you can manage those. Inside that portal, you can create them, you can destroy them, you can, you know, hibernate them, you can sort of manage them as you need. So again, these are things a developer needs to do. Hey, I'm writing some code. I want to try it out. What do I do? Spin up a new environment real quick, deploy my code to it, and test it. Make sure it's working.
Yep.
So the vision is, imagine all of this together. Continuous integration builds, continuous deployments, managing my dev environments, my test environments, my production environments, seeing how much money I'm spending, all of that in one place that's integrated with cross-linking. That's the vision. It's kind of the, you know, kind of the DevOps dream of cloud development, and so we're on a journey. We're at the beginning. We've got, you know, a small subset of functionality, and you know, one of the other things I want to make sure people understand is, so there's this, you know, this thing, portal.azure.com, and when you go in there and you create a Visual Studio Online project, you check in code, you do all of that. All of that is actually in Visual Studio Online, and it isn't like it's a separate island.
Right.
So if you go to visualstudio.com, it's there too.
Right.
So it's two experiences over the same fundamental data, with the Azure portal experience being optimized for the Azure cloud developer and sort of the Visual Studio Online experience optimized for everybody else.
It's like a companion app, I think the way you blogged about it.
That's great.
Well, obviously, your team is very busy. Lots of stuff coming out in the last 12 months, and I can tell you're already hard at work on Update 3 and future updates and maybe the next major version of Visual Studio and TFS. And it's always exciting to kind of wake up every 3 weeks and take a look at the service blog on Visual Studio Online and see what's in my development account. And it's really, really exciting. So I want to thank you for being here with us on TechEd and sharing with us some of the ways in which you think about application lifecycle management. And I'm sure we'll be having this conversation again next year.
Thanks a ton, Brian. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian. And this is signing off from Channel 9 Live. And we'll go back to the next session. Thanks.